Hey, this is Kyle Clark. You're listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News and streaming live same time on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com.
The JBS meatpacking strike began with a roar of national attention on the biggest walkout that industry's seen in decades. Yet it ended with a whimper when workers went back to work without a contract, then reached a deal shortly after, a deal that had both the union and the company claiming victory. Our Mark Salinger takes a closer look now that national media attention has faded and our neighbors are back on the lines.
How do you win a strike? After 3 weeks off the job and hours at the negotiating table, the union representing nearly 4,000 meatpacking workers in Greeley announced on Sunday night that they'd come to an agreement with JBS. Both sides claim they came out on top. So let's look at what actually came from the strike.
We're telling JBS what we're feeling inside while working.
Employees will get a 70-cent wage increase when the agreement is ratified. Then they'll get another 40 cents in July of 2026 and July of 2027. The agreement increased each of the three scheduled raises by 10 cents over JBS's original offer before the strike. The union is celebrating that, but JBS says it comes at a cost. The company says the union chose to forego an offer for a pension and instead redirect the pension contributions to short-term wage increases. It's worth noting the Greeley plant never had a pension before. JBS offered one during these negotiations. Workers chose wages instead.
That JBS is charging workers for the replacement of personal protective equipment that they are responsible to provide.
The union also voted to strike after allegations that JBS was charging workers for personal protective equipment and garnishing wages. The union says the new agreement bars workers from having to pay for protective gear. And the union will withdraw 7 alleged unfair labor practice charges against JBS.
The spin is always happening. While the union says this is a full win with no concessions, JBS says nothing really changed from the offer they gave before the strike to what's now been ratified. There certainly were some changes and some concessions, Kyle, on both sides.
And just goes without saying for anybody who, say, eats meat but doesn't think a lot about where it comes from, that these jobs can be physically and sometimes emotionally pretty brutal.
And extremely dangerous as well. One of the reasons that the union said they didn't want the pension was because it would be so little even after so many years of working in such difficult environments, Kyle.
Mark Salinger, thank you.
Denver's Archbishop is responding after President Trump verbally attacked the Pope and Trump shared a depiction of himself as Jesus Christ. Is that bad? You're not supposed to do that? Archbishop James Golka said Trump's attacks on Pope Leo are, quote unquote, not acceptable. Said Trump's diatribe against the Pope does not serve the common good. Trump shared this social media image depicting himself as Jesus healing the sick. And he slammed Pope Leo as being, all caps, weak on crime. And Trump took personal credit for the fact that Leo is Pope. Not to get into a religious debate on the local news, but compared to many other faiths, Catholics are generally not considered to be real softies on misbehavior in life, what with the eternal damnation to the fires of hell and all. But in other news, Colorado's Republican Party often insists that voting needs to be done in person with hand counting. And Colorado's Republican Party often proves how that can become an utter mess. Take last weekend's state assembly in Pueblo.
We have an overvote situation. We don't believe there's been any fraud at all. Possibly, and if it is, it's minuscule.
If that line sounds familiar, that there is no evidence of widespread fraud, that's because that's the line from elections officials that Colorado Republicans routinely dismiss when they're throwing out accusations of election meddling. And that elephant was in the room with the rest of them on Saturday as party volunteers spent nearly 7 hours trying to register the more than 2,000 delegates on Saturday and still managed to get it wrong. When the voting finally happened, delegates selected two candidates for the Republican gubernatorial primary in June, pastor and state rep Scott Bottoms in blue there and ministry leader Victor Marks in black. Except for the fact that there were 90 more ballots cast than there were humans credentialed. The Party of Election Integrity voted, just let it slide.
they decide to accept the results. Bottoms and Marks will likely be joined on the primary ballot by one less MAGA option, State Senator Barb Kirkmeyer, who went the petition signature route rather than the assembly. GOP delegates also nominated a far-right primary challenger for this man, Republican Congressman Jeff Hurd, who's angered some hardline conservatives for breaking with President Trump on key issues like tariffs. Former state legislator and election denier Ron Hanks is now going to face Congressman Hurd in the June primary after he lost to him in the primary in 2024. It's still not clear who's going to be eligible to vote in those Republican primaries in June. As it stands now, unaffiliated voters can participate along with Republicans, just like they can in Democratic primaries. But this weekend, Republicans voted to sue the state to keep those unaffiliated voters out. When somebody gets locked up in jail, they're granted bond. They pay it and they're released within a couple of hours. Except immigration detainees say when they pay bond, they can wait up to a week to get out. Our Angeline McCall spoke with a family and an attorney about the delays in immigration bond releases.
Take it day by day.
In detention, days feel like weeks.
Things move really slowly, unfortunately.
And when you're expecting to be released, the days feel even longer.
Yo sí pensaba que sí iba a ser rápido. Pero pues no fue así.
Just ask Dionisio Castillo.
Tú ya tienes que esperar más tiempo ahí dentro.
He was detained early this year.
El 14 de enero hasta el 3 de marzo.
Dionisio's lawyer asked the judge to grant bond and let him out. The judge granted that request at $2,500. Then his daughter, Jocelyn Castillo Flores, waited to post the money.
I applied for the bond. I got no response.
It took more than 24 hours just for ICE to tell her they would accept her payment.
Every single hour, every 5 minutes, or every minute, I was refreshing that webpage to see if they approve and he will be released soon. Nothing, nothing, nothing.
She paid, then they waited. One day, two, six more days detained.
Yeah, it's not fair that they're holding us because, well, we already got the approval from the judge. The judge already has the evidence.
His attorney, Hans Meyer, says this is happening to about 80% of his clients granted release by an immigration judge.
Once a person posts a bond, they should be released the same day. But even once a person does post that bond, what we're seeing ICE is doing is slow rolling or delaying the release. This process is not only unfair, it's unconstitutional, right? Because you're not allowed to hold people for fun.
In a statement, a spokesperson told us, quote, ICE does not delay the release of aliens after bond has been posted, sharing it could take several days due to standard administrative, security, and coordination requirements. Meyer says, though, the delays have gotten so bad, lawyers have had to file additional paperwork to demand release already granted.
That's not the way our legal system should work.
Like in this case, where court documents say ICE didn't give a family clear guidance on how to pay bond, telling them to come back the next day for 5 days.
If a local jail detained you for 5 or 6 extra days when they weren't legally authorized to do so, you could sue them and recover money because that's illegal. Violates a person's Fourth Amendment rights.
To families, getting granted bond feels like a relief. Then it's freedom denied.
I just felt like I failed my dad, like I didn't do enough. When in reality it was them who were failing me and didn't process the actual payment. When I thought it was me. And I was just crying.
Families wonder if extra days in detention is just another form of extra punishment.
The spokesperson shared in their statement that ICE and detention facilities need to complete a series of required steps prior to allowing people to post bond, as well as steps afterwards. They didn't answer our question, though, about what has caused this change, because Meyer says before February 2025, detainees were released within hours and no later than a day, Kyle.
And it's a change that costs taxpayers money, clearly.
Yeah, for every single day that someone is in detention, taxpayers are footing that bill and paying the price. So for Dionisio, taxpayers paid an extra 6 days of unnecessary detention because a judge ordered his release. Now, when you think of all the other people out there that have also been delayed, think about how many thousands of dollars that would be just within the Denver area.
Yeah, it'd stack up. Angeline McCall, thank you very much. So, been talking a lot recently on social media with some of you about the idea of what is within control of in our lives and what is out of our control, and how helpful it can be to focus on what is within our control. like your weekly microgiving campaigns, which just raised about $55,000 last week for the nonprofit Friends of Broomfield. They have programs for our neighbors with intellectual and developmental disabilities, including an independent living academy, where they teach people how to prepare to live on their own, often because their caregiver, like a parent, is aging. You've raised $18 million for Colorado's nonprofits since the year 2020 by building a mountain of $5 donations each week, and we will be keeping this going. So keep telling me about the nonprofit causes in Colorado that matter to you and your community. You can find me anywhere on social media. You can email next at 9news.com, or you can text next at 303-871-1491. Parts of the mountain formerly known as Evans will soon be under new management thanks to a partnership with the city of Denver. And her father's treasured instrument got an unexpected encore.
How proud he would be that I did this. He would be so excited.
Generations past and present connect over a love of music through a used instrument drive. Next. The road to the top of Mount Blue Sky is set to reopen this Memorial Day after being closed for repairs the past 2 years. And when that pass reopens, the mountain we used to call Mount Evans will also have new management. Tonight, Denver City Council approved an agreement that would give the city a new role in managing the Welcome Station, the Summit Area, and the Mount Goliath Natural Area. Under this proposal, city staff would work at the Welcome Station and do some park maintenance, and city park rangers would take over in those areas. Forest Service would not be totally cut out of the equation. They'd still have some staff on hand. They'd get a small cut of the revenue, but a lot of the revenue from park entry fees would then go to the city of Denver and the nonprofit Denver Mountain Parks Foundation. If you ask Coloradans, the fires and flooding in western Colorado last year were pretty disastrous. If you ask the Trump administration, suck it up, buttercup. The state says FEMA has again denied the state's appeal for additional disaster aid to help with the recovery from the flooding down in southern Colorado, as well as the Lee and Elk fires in northwest Colorado. The state's been denied additional aid for the record-breaking floods that caused $13 million in damage, double that in damage from the fires. Yet FEMA says it's not severe enough for a major disaster declaration, which would open up additional federal funding. Democratic Governor Jared Polis appealed the decision back in December, had the bipartisan backing from the entire congressional delegation. Again today, FEMA said no. Colorado's emergency management director says the state's recovery task force will continue to support families and to search for alternative funding sources, but said, quote, I don't want it to sound like we can just fill all of the gaps. We can't. Chris Bianchi, I like my disaster aid delivered, and I like my spring snowfall measurable.
And we might get some of that on Friday here, Kyle. And we've had 30 consecutive years of measurable snow in the month of April or in May in Denver. And in fact, just in case you're unfamiliar, on a long-term basis, April is Denver's second snowiest month of the year. So I always get questions, are we done with snow yet here in the Denver area? Most likely not, and I'll show you that possibility at the end of the week. But again, every year since 1995, Denver's had snow in April or in May. So radar sort of shows some of that snow, of course, here in the mountains. Not seeing that in Denver yet. We're not going to see any snow for a couple days here in town. But in the mountains, we'll get some snow, and that'll be heaviest west of the Continental Divide late tonight. So Red Mountain Pass, Wolf Creek Pass, even McClure Monarch Pass. So those are going to be a rough go for you tonight and early tomorrow morning. Then as we head through the day, that snow will push east and it'll bring with it some rain showers into the Denver area. Maybe a few claps of thunder if we can get some sunshine in the morning tomorrow. Steadiest rain will be north of Denver. So that's storm one. But then storm two will take shape Friday and Saturday. And it is looking like this is the one that could bring us maybe some snow into the Denver area on Friday. It is a colder looking storm and also one with a bit more water with it. And if that storm track can be a little further south, there's a chance we'll be talking about some measurable snow here in Denver. Then we're in the 50s for Saturday, 70s for Sunday and Monday. So as is typical this time of year, a bit of a roller coaster ride. I want to leave you with one thing, that potential for snow later this week. Denver, possible that we get some snow on Friday night. And on Friday night, you got two big sports events. You got the Rockies and you got the U.S. Women's National Team playing Japan on Friday night at Dick's Sporting Goods Park.
An old instrument found new life with a school band, and today the former owner got to fill him in on the backstory. That's next. A story we first brought you last December about donated instruments helping Colorado's band programs is still making music months later. One French horn, passed down through generations, has now found a new home making a new impact. Our Byron Reed has that.
It's just beautiful.
Musical instruments hold many stories. For Janice Shannon,
yay,
this French horn strikes a chord.
Just how proud he would be that I did this. He would be so excited.
Shannon is visiting the band at Jefferson Academy in Broomfield, sharing the story of her father and his attachment to an instrument he loved.
My dad started his musical journey in high school, and he, the school had a French horn that he was able to borrow and play. A picture of my dad, he was 21, this was 1943.
Her father played the French horn through the Great Depression, served in a Navy band during World War II, and didn't buy this French horn until he was 58 years old.
And he played it in all different kinds of groups until just before his death, when he was 89.
We are doing our what we call our school secret Santa.
Last winter,
I saw the segment, it was on in December on Next with Kyle Clark.
Janice donated the instrument to Rocky Mountain Music Repair after seeing my story on their school secret Santa instrument drive.
So it tugged at my heartstrings because I was the keeper of the French horn.
The horn ended up here with a letter telling the story of Janice's father.
And so I read it to the class and I cried, of course. So every time I bring it up, I'm like, hey, remember that letter I read and I cried to you, you know?
And he was so proud of that horn.
The instrument also hit a high note with seventh grader Ethan Glenn, who learned how to play on the donated French horn that now has a unique name.
I don't remember the full story on why I named it Roberta, but I was brainstorming names with Miss Villarda, and she brought it up, and I was like, oh, I like that.
And he played it.
For Janice, the day was more than sharing her father's memories. It's about how one instrument can create countless stories.
I hope they walk away with the history involved and that their stories are just beginning.
For Next.
All right. Thank you guys so much.
I'm Byron Reed.
Oh, sweet story. Every instrument should have a name. My trombone was Paco, and we're back with your feedback next. I didn't know there was such a thing as a perfect mistake until I was watching the live feed of the Colorado Republican State Assembly over the weekend, and they couldn't figure out how to turn off their background music during the speakers, which led to Treasurer nominee Kevin Grantham talking about fiscal accountability in harmony with an instrumental cover of Coldplay's Fix You.
Regular Coloradans like us have to tighten our belts. So should the state. Fellow Republicans, this is a winnable race. As the only Republican in this race, I am already laser focused on defeating the Democrat this November. On every issue where Democrats have failed Coloradans, we offer sound solutions and not empty promises.
So synced up with that music. It's a shame the audio mix is bad. They could put it out as a campaign ad. If, of course, his campaign could afford to license the music or pay for an ad. But if nothing else, I found it to be stirring. Lane in Denver writes, many of us suspect that you know that the mountain, formerly called Mount Evans, was renamed Mount Blue Sky because former Governor Evans was responsible for the Sand Creek Massacre. So why the formerly label you use today? Suck it up, Buttercup. Say the right name. Thanks, writes Lane. Well, Lane, I don't want anybody to be confused on the news. So if I can use the current name first and then mention what it was formerly, then nobody shouts at their TV, what's that guy talking about? That's one of our goals around here, clarity. And also transparency. To that end, Tom noticed that I shaved and he wrote, hey, Kyle, is that your face? No, Tom, this is my face.
Thanks for listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News. Streaming live, same time, on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com. Next producer is Mallory Harris. Our digital producer is Marilyn Moore. Our visual editor is Jeff Sartell. Our reporters include Marshall Zellinger, Mark Salinger, Angeline McCall, and Evan Kruel. Misty Montano is 9 News' digital director. I'm Kyle Clark. I'll see you next time.